Welcome to The Pestle, reviewing and breaking down movies to look for insights into the movie-making process. Hosted by The Apocalypse, finally we're all outside playing again. Let's blow out the candles and start the show.
Welcome everyone to The Pestle. Today's show is brought to you by Mac and Cheese, a street-smart detective and a crime-solving robot. What could go right? Find out this week on Mac and Cheese. Welcome everyone to The Pestle. I am Wes.
And I am Todd.
And we're filmmakers, and we review films and see how things click and how they go boom. And so we like to bring whatever we've learned, you know, from being on set into analysis of a film, and also reverse engineer some things to see what could I emulate. And I feel like I'm constantly looking for little tidbits of things that I can emulate. And I think this film today has several things that I really want to play with in the sandbox. And with that, let's just dive right in. What are we looking at today, man? My enemy.
Yeah. So today we are covering Alex Garland's Civil War. So if you haven't seen this film, please pause this episode. Go watch it. Right now it's in the theater. It's a great place to see this type of film. We're going to spoil a bunch of stuff.
Everything. We'll look at a little bit of cinematography, not much, but there's a shot in there that I really liked composition-wise. We'll definitely look at some of the story and writing, strong character arcs, and some of the sound design, the music, and other such stuff and things and stuff.
And a quick synopsis of the film. A journey across a dystopian future America following a team of military-embedded journalists as they race against time to reach D.C. before rebel factions descend upon the White House. It's written and directed by Alex Garland. Cinematography by Rob Hardy, featuring Kirsten Dunst as Lee, Kaylee Spaney as Jesse, Wagner Mora as Joel, Stephen McKinley Henderson as Sammy, and Nelson Lee as Tony.
I'm sorry for jamming my way into your ride, okay? I know you're really angry about it, and I know you think I don't know shit, but...
I'm not angry about that, Jesse. I don't care what you do or don't know.
Okay, but you are angry with me.
There is no version of this that isn't a mistake. I know, because I'm it. Joe and Sammy are it.
It's my choice.
Right. And I'll remember that when you lose your shit, or you get blown up, or shot.
So, good vibes all around. Todd, I'm dying to know. Alex Garland is always doing something in his own kind of sandbox. This feels more into keeping of what you would expect from a popcorn film, or not a popcorn film, but something more mainstream. This is his most mainstream film to date, I would say. Going into this movie, what were you expecting and what is your reaction?
I purposefully stayed away from any kind of anything of what this was, because I felt like if I knew anything about it, it would probably, I don't know, it would probably ruin it, because this type of film can, I don't know, get pigeonholed really quick into what it is, you know, like, especially with society today, you just side with one side and you go along with that side, right? And so I tried to stay away from it. One thing I'll say is that I feel like this wasn't really promoted very well, wasn't marketed very well. Every time I've seen it, there's the title's in this really bright green, which doesn't make any sense to me, which I know it sounds small and stupid, but it's not. It's like very important. In fact, it's like one of the most important things, because that's what you remember when you, that's what's going to go out everywhere. And it just feels like, what is this? And it wasn't hard to ignore stuff about it. So I just wasn't super crazy about the promotion for it. However, when I got into it, I realized really quick that it wasn't what I was going to expect, right? You start off with the president, which I think is a great place to start, and him delivering, like, in a difficult way, delivering some kind of speech. And I don't know if I'm a slow human being, but there was a lot that I didn't really follow. Like, and I think it was on purpose. It was like, why is this happening? That we know that there's California and Texas and Florida factions and stuff, and you know, and that maybe California and Texas have broken away from the United States, and they're their own thing. So there's battles going on, but we don't necessarily know why. doesn't explain it to us. And please, in the middle of me talking, correct me if you know more than
this is all accurate. Texas, this is what he says. And I watched it twice and I got it completely wrong the first time I watched it. But in the opening, you're right. He says Texas and California have seceded. Now, I don't know if that's the Western forces, as they're referred to throughout the film. I don't think that's super clear, or at least not abundantly clear. But that's my impression, is they've seceded. I don't know if they've teamed up or not. And so,
California and Texas teaming up.
Yeah,
interesting.
I don't see that. Yeah.
Yeah. However, what I was hoping to get out of it is what I did get out of it, honestly. Like, so I was hoping, okay, we are taking this point of view from a journalist. This is a journalistic point of view, right? So it almost doesn't matter why it's happening. It almost doesn't matter what happens. And they call that out a lot, because they talk, you know, she asks, Kirsten Dunst's character asks, would you take the picture? Or no,
It's Kaylee Spaney's.
Kaylee Spaney's asked, would you take the picture if I'm shot? And so, and that's the question, is there a line, journalistically speaking, and as to what you will photograph or what you will capture, right? What moment you will or won't capture. And Lee has her line in the sand, which turns out to be when Sammy dies. And which I think is a really important moment, because that to me defines her humanity a little bit, at least in this as this character. Like, she's so brutally destroyed by what she's seen. She's just dead inside, and you can see it the entire time. I thought her performance was really good. God, Kirsten Dunst's performance.
Yes.
I mean, how do you give an emotional performance with like no emotion, you know? I think you need to have a lot of emotion and not let it out. And that's what I feel. I feel like she has so much in her that she's just heavy. You feel every time there's a close up on her face, you feel the weight of all that she's seen, and all that she's documented. There's something to be said about seeing something terrible happen and take a picture of it. You know, you're not helping the guy that's shot and dying on the ground. You're taking a picture of him. It's brutal. And they have that moment where Jesse shows Lee the photograph of the guy dying when they're sitting in the stands, and she's thumbing through her photographs, her negatives, trying to find a good one, and she sees that one, and she says that's a great photograph. So anyway, I thought that the pacing of it was really good. I thought that the brutality of it was fantastic. I mean, one of my favorite, I was sitting there watching it on the big screen, and which is why I said at the beginning that you should see this on the big screen, because there are these moments, not just for the visuals, but for the sound. There are these moments that there is silence. I mean, I stopped eating my popcorn. I didn't drink. I just sat there in silence for a good 30 seconds. And everyone around, I could tell, just held still, waited. And then sometimes it would just kind of like the sound would just come back. Other times it would explode back with like a gunshot or something. And it just scared the crap out of me, which I think is the point. The point is just, you know, there is peace and there is war. And and there is a very fine line or definitive line between the two, right? And it's a gunshot or it's an explosion or something. And these moments of these guys getting shot and killed. You know, it's a lot of times it's an afterthought in movies like this, and they make you stay with it. And in fact, there's when they did the execution of the guys with the hoods, they do slow motion. You see the explosion of the bullets hitting them and the blood spurting out and them rolling on the ground in slow motion. He wants you to stay in that moment. He wants you to ask yourself, you know, how do you feel about this? Because it's so easy to see a photograph about something and just, you know, let it go. And it's the way that it started really set the tone for me. I'll stop talking after this. They do all of these moments of her in all of these places, photographing all of these terrible things. The one shot of the guy with inside the tire, getting lit on fire, I lost it. I was like, oh my God, what am I in for? You know, like that, it was only maybe, you know, 15 frames. It was short. It was so short. And he did it right. He did so tastefully.
It was forever. Like
forever?
That thing probably lasted like 15 seconds.
I don't remember that. I remember them setting him on fire and then it cut away.
Oh, no. Okay. No. You looked away then.
Like, okay, maybe I did.
Because that thing slowly devours him and then you just linger. Like, it's freaking brutal.
Ugh,
and some of the best fire animation I've ever seen.
Was it animation? I was hoping it wasn't real. So. I mean, regardless,
it was. Sacrifices in art, Todd.
I mean, maybe I did. I would not be surprised if I did look away. Because, like, it just set the tone for, okay, I'm in for something heavy. The one thing that I will say that I did not like, and it's really, honestly, the only thing, is that everybody freaking dies because of Jesse. Like, she's just, I mean, not everybody dies because of Jesse, but a lot, actually, yeah, kind of everybody dies because of Jesse. And it drives me crazy when that kind of thing happens. It feels like, almost like a trope. You have the young, impressionable person who's like the go-getter and is in the wrong place at the wrong time. And so the more seasoned veteran has to save that person and sacrifices their life for it. I mean, that I've seen that. I just kind of didn't want that to be the reason why, you know, like the guy from Hong Kong dies, you know, and his buddy from the car. And then also Sammy dies because of it, you know, and then also Lee dies because of her. You know, she's in the wrong place at the wrong time, getting too far ahead of herself and whatever. And look, I get it that it, you know, that kind of thing can and probably should happen in a story like this. But like maybe once. I didn't want everyone to die because of her.
I'll make a small counterpoint. Maybe she saved their lives by getting in the other car and that car speeds off. Because if she hadn't, maybe they both get stopped at the same time by those guys. And then there's no one outside that can come in and rescue them. Sammy stayed back, rescued them.
I think that's a stretch. I think it's a stretch. And the only reason I think it's a stretch is because they never call anything like that out. I mean, you could sit there and think, but like, you know, like there's never a moment where you're thinking that they forgive her or that they're even mad at her.
Yeah.
You know, like Lee doesn't act mad at her. Neither does, who's her friend? Is it Joel?
Yeah, Joel.
Neither does Joel. They don't act. I mean, he's upset, and man, I love those moments of him screaming where you can't even hear him scream because the tanks are driving behind him. Such a great moment.
Visceral.
His acting in this film is fantastic. All the acting is great.
I mean, the four of them all together was just the freaking best. They were all guns firing. It was just amazing.
Yes. But I just thought, look, you know, she gets in the car, you know, they're all dead. You know, like it's just, or somebody's going to die and it's going to be because of her. And my point is that, yes, you could maybe make that case, but that's kind of a stretch. And we know, and it is 100% her fault that Lee dies in the end. 100%. Like, come on.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing for her to like have been told, go over here, and she's where she's supposed to be and something happens and then Lee saves her. But for her to jump out in the middle of the damn corridor to take a photo, like, come on. That's all I'm saying is that was my big,
absolutely,
my big qualm.
But she did that because she watched Lee do it first. She saw Lee do it and said, oh, I want to get that shot too, but I'm going to get the shot. Because the shot that Lee got, there was no one in there was just an empty hallway. Yep. So she's like, I can get that shot.
I know.
Maybe Lee felt responsible for setting that up. She shouldn't. Like,
well, Lee feels responsible for her anyway.
Yeah.
She, like, no matter what, she, you know, she says, she's that clip you showed, even in her saying, none of this is good. And if you, I'll remember that you said that it's your choice when you get shot. And all of that is a front for the whole reason that she got out of the car in the first place to let her photograph the helicopter, which was basically to tell her, I'm worried. You know, like that moment is set up to say, I'm going to try to, like, I feel responsible for you, you know, without saying it.
Yeah.
And she does. That's why she didn't want her in her car in the first place, because she feels responsible for her, because she doesn't know what the fuck she's doing. You know, she's just, and it is great. Like, Alex Garland does a great job of directing Kaylee Spaney in those moments where she can't breathe, and the throw up scene where she God. Yeah, after she's in the mass grave and she just like throws up, it just keeps coming out. Like, they hang on her for a good five seconds, six seconds, I don't know. It's intense, man. They're just such a great, I can see, obviously she's a great actor, but I can also see the directing in that. And the choice in editing of like, no, hang on it. I want this to be like, it's obvious that she's throwing up and it wasn't just in her mouth or that it's CG'd or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, she's, and I wonder how they did that. It looked like more than what could have been in her mouth, but
yeah, anyway. I wonder if it's a combination of you start with stuff in her mouth, which then gives you a reference frame for whenever it's empty. And then she just continues acting like it's coming out. And now you have, it's much easier to make that CG because you have those references very, very strongly.
Great point.
But maybe it's all CG. I don't know. But it's definitely made me like, oh, God, like that's gross and, you know, disheartening.
and also the last thing I'll say is that I feel like this stays, which I kind of like, I feel like this stays kind of neutral where, you know, we're on the side of the journalist. We don't want to see any of them die. We're not necessarily on the side of anyone, any like the military or on the president or whatever. We just want to see them get to their destination in one piece and to be able to interview the president, which is what their goal was in the first place. You know, you have good military, you have bad seeming military. You don't know who's who or who's like on whose side. And I think that that's important and maybe a statement of like, does it even matter? You know,
because at some points, but it doesn't even sound like there are military people. Like, they're just dressed in fatigues for camouflage, not because they're representing a force.
Right.
There's that whole sniper section, right, where Joel is trying to figure it out. Like, who are you fighting for? What side are you on? Sides.
Oh, right.
And the guy says, someone's trying to kill us. We're trying to kill them. And this is where, you know, everything gets a little, I don't know, dicey in terms of modern times, which I think is also a point that the film is pushing a lot of buttons. But the guy says, well, whose side are you? And so you're with the Western forces. And the guy's like, oh, I get it. You're and it's a laugh line because you think he's going to answer the question at last. And he's like, you're acting ridiculous. Like, you're still thinking in terms of sides. And all I know is that someone is trying to kill me and therefore I need to kill them. And that's whenever, of course, he turns to Jesse and is like, hey, you, who's in that building? And she's like, I don't know how to answer this. There's someone over there shooting at us. She gets it. Like, it's just this evolving conversation that I think is exactly what you're talking about. There is no sides to some extent. And to the extent that there is, we're unaware because we're in neutral territory. And it goes back to what you said at the beginning of these are journalists and our perspective is theirs. And there is no strong sense of who we should be rooting for because of that. And if you're doing a good job as a journalist, you're not thinking in those terms, right? And I think this whole movie is rooted in what Lee tells Jesse in the car when they escape that little gas station with the guys who you think are dead and realize they're not. They're saving them. They're like a snack. Like they're debating how they're going to, you know, execute these guys for fun almost. Well, not almost. It looks very much like it's a fun little thing. The guy's laughing about it. And what she says to Jesse, because Jesse's like, should I have taken a photo? I forget exactly what Jesse's saying there, but she's like,
yeah, I didn't take a single photograph.
Yeah, should I have done that? Like, should I have helped them? Like, I didn't know what to do. And Lee cuts all that off. And she's like, you can't start asking yourself those questions. Once you do, you're done. You know, our job is to take the photograph, is to document it. And that lets others ask the questions. And I think thematically, that's this whole film is just documenting what, from the perspective of Alex Garland, what our country looks like right now. There are really not sides. There's kind of sides. You have you know, Texans doing whatever we are supposedly doing. And then you have Californians representing whatever they're representing. And then you have the rest of the country that kind of fits along some lines and sometimes not. And it's all very messy. There are no clear sides for a lot of the stuff that, you know, is going on in modern society, even though you might start to think there's a side. And at the end of the day, at this point, you get two people in a room that say they're on the same side of whatever their big issue is, and you start drilling down, I guarantee you they fall apart very quickly when you start talking about other issues. Like, it's not clear at all. And I think he's looking at our country, and Alex Garland is British. Like, he's not, he might be American now. I don't know where he lives and what his citizenship status is or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think this is like an outsider's perspective of what America looks like right now. And it looks like a war-torn hellscape, where occasionally you stumble into some conversation or some people that are neutral, that I'm just staying out of it, but right, that town that they run into, and they're like, it feels like everything I'd forgotten. And then you sneak a peek, and on the rooftop there's guys with guns, and Sammy's like, funny, I was just thinking the opposite, it reminds me of everything I remembered. It's like, are they neutral, are they not? They're at the minimum, they're not engaged in the war. But is that even possible? Can you not be engaged? And so it's asking you to ask all these questions rather than asking and resolving any of those. Because is it possible in America today to actually remain neutral? There's your question. Now go fight. This whole movie is one snapshot of America in its current state. And there's so many little interesting, that moment you're talking about where they execute those guys outside of, I don't know, is that a university? Is that a corporate building? Who knows? And it goes silent, goes into music, and you see them get lined up, and then you cut to Joel. And Joel is having this funny conversation, and the first gunshot, you don't hear it, you see it on his face whenever he jumps and starts turning. Like, and that's a beautiful... What a great, the sound design I love so much in this movie. It's going to win some awards. Minimum get nominated, but I'd bet my money that, I know it's early, it's only April. We haven't gotten to the Academy contenders yet, but this should be in the strong contention for sound design. And it's so good because it's forcing you to engage with the film. It's not ever pushing you until later in the film. It really doesn't push you into a corner. It's setting you up and giving you these head fakes so that you stumble into these moments blindsided. Like the beginning of the film, we're playing this light poppy music. You could probably tell me who that is, but there's this cool song that feels reminiscent of like 60s wartime, Rolling Stones or something, and it's just like, you're watching these things unfold, and it's like, oh, here's a demonstration, what's going on? And you're watching photographers. One gets bashed in the face, and that's how Jesse meets Lee. They pull her out, and this poppy music's going. And I love that scene, that flash where you see the woman running with the flag, and it's so fast. That's a very fast moment where you see it and you're like, oh, here's this wacko running with the flag. And it's Lee's reaction to it, to get down. It's like, wait, no. And then it takes a hot second. It blows up, and you're still processing while it's blowing up. Did she just detonate? She detonated. That was a suicide bomber. And then just bodies are flying, and then everything goes dead quiet. And that's that moment you were talking about earlier, like this 30 seconds, longest seconds of your life, looking at the carnage and then seeing Lee go over and document it. Like, that is hardcore. And then you see Jesse documenting her documenting it. And I think, again, that's a hat tip to what this movie is really trying to tell you it's about. It's not about the carnage. It's about us seeing and witnessing the documentation of the carnage. And that gives you a little bit of insight into, yeah, we're here to ask ourselves the questions, and he's just there to show you. It's a mirror. This whole movie is just one big mirror. Whether or not you want to look at the reflection is up to you. And that's a really cool... I love that approach to filmmaking in general. And I really respect... Because going into this, I was tired. Like, I didn't know what this was going to be, but it felt like this is going to be another preachy film where someone's telling me how to feel about the state of, you know, affairs. And then you get into it and it's not like it's really not at all. And that's so refreshing because it let me engage much more emotionally with the film and not feel I was getting the Uncle Sam finger pointed in my face for, you know, an hour and a half. Tired, exhausted. And I feel like most of America is probably pretty exhausted at this point as well, which is why I would be surprised if this movie does well at the box office, because to your point, I don't think it's well marketed at all either.
Yeah.
I can imagine half of America thinking that this is going to be a movie telling them how they're shit and they need to, you know, repent and be saved.
Yeah. And then and it ending, you know, with the president getting shot, like it is aggressive in ways, but yeah, the marketing is bad because it, I think you're right. Like I was exhausted too. I am exhausted too. I didn't want to be preached to. I didn't want to, be told a right or a wrong side. And so the fact that we didn't get that and it wasn't that, I think needed to kind of be out there as part of the marketing. Not necessarily for you or I, because I know we don't like to see that, but we were going to go see the film anyway.
Yeah.
But for all the people that probably wouldn't go, or you know, that might not go, like saying, I don't know how you do it, but just basically saying, this isn't what you think. Even if that's all you say, this is not what you think. That's enough, you know? Okay, great. Then let's see what it is then. Anyway, but I like that also the first group of guys that they follow aren't in military gear. They don't have fatigues on. So we're thinking, okay, are these guerrillas? You know, like who are these, like just a militia? Like, you know, who are these guys? And then later on, they're following people in fatigues. There are no answer, you know, or, and then there's bad people in fatigues, like Jesse Plemons, like, oh my God, you know, just being terrible. So we don't know who's good. We don't know who's bad. They just show up with people and then we're like, okay, they're with them. So they must be the good guys, I guess, because they're not killing them.
And I think that's because good and bad has largely been relegated to your own personal opinion. Like there's no philosophical grounding to a lot of people's views on the right and wrong. And therefore it's whatever, like, oh, what? Yeah, you're American. What kind of American? Central, South, Southern. And whenever you say that, you could be literally thinking he's talking about Central America or South America. And you're not entirely sure until he says Florida. And he's like, good, you know, Central. So Central, that's good. And you're like, oh, no. So everyone's kind of drawing their own arbitrary lines in the sand. And for a while, I wasn't even clear if the president was actually the president. I think it wasn't until my second viewing before I realized, oh no, he is the president of the United States, and it's the rebel forces that are like knocking him out because of just how hazy everything is in this film. And I love that there's no opening scrawl that tells you here's the setup. It's like, because again, it's not about that. But yeah, the music though, man, I love Alex Garland's approach to score and music. Like between this and Devs, it's just always interesting tones that he creates through music choices. And a lot of it, you know, he uses some score, but a lot of it is, oh my God, not soundtrack. Good God, Wes. A lot of it's just soundtrack, you know, and the light poppy music is so good at the beginning because it's setting us up for the suicide bomber through a really strong contrast, right? It gives us a false sense of safety. And he does that repeatedly, you know, throughout the film, to the point to where when you get to the end of the film, you no longer trust anything that's happening. In fact, quite the opposite. There's that scene when they're in DC and the tank is in the street and it's blowing everything up. Or the chopper is in the air, I should say. And it's like just firing missiles in the buildings. And Joel smiles over at Jesse. And Jesse looks at him and smiles back. And that made me feel like everyone's about to die. Like, I don't trust any of that. This is another false sense of safety. And it just raised the tension through the roof for me. So now I'm expecting for them to die. And of course, it ends up being Lee that dies. But it's just such a great use of creating false sense of safety through music choices, through sound design. You just don't know anymore. And for me, that was the biggest takeaway throughout this movie, was the level of tension was outrageous. Like the second viewing, and then maybe I just watched it too soon, because I watched it twice, Friday and then Saturday night, and there was no tension. Like I watched the entire thing without an ounce of tension. Not to say that there wasn't any emotion, because when Sammy dies, that still knocks me over. That moment you're talking about where Joel is screaming, it's effective. Like I was struggling. Yeah. And of course you also just love Sammy. I mean, he's this bigger guy who, yeah, you know, needs a cane, and he saves the day, and there's just everything about him. You just, you know, makes you just whatever, want to sleep next to him. Like, you know, Jesse does in the car, like I'm safe here. Like that's Sammy. Yeah. And the other thing as an aside, like I love that Alex Garland likes to rework with his actors. He brings in people from other projects. Like I think almost the entire cast of Devs is in this film. Like Stephen McKinley Henderson, Kaylee Spaney, you have Jin Ha, Carl Glusman, who they played the sniper and the spotter, and I didn't even recognize them. I recognized their names in the credits, but I couldn't recognize them because they were just geared up, and of course that's my problem in general.
Yeah.
And Nick Offerman, right, from Devs. Mm-hmm. Like this whole film is running on Devs fuel. And then you add in, you know, Maura Wagner and Kirsten Dunst, and my God, Kirsten Dunst, man, she's so good. To your point, I don't have anything to add. I just want to reiterate that she's just amazing. Like I love seeing her in this hardened veteran role, because it's really nice to see these contrasts, and these arcs are really, really good for that, because they're set up so strongly at the beginning, right? You have their veteran and your rookie photographers who are now going to provide vastly different experiences and perspectives, which gives you different arcs, right? Jesse at the beginning can't take a picture, right? And she needs a spotter. And I love that. I love that Joel is hanging back and grabbing her Kevlar so that he can thrust her in when it's safe and pull her back when it's not. And he's training her while protecting her. Like, it doesn't get easier than that. It's not going to be very easy to shout for her and then trust her instincts to creep out, and then she's just not going to get the job done. And so he's going to take control. He's going to grab her and force her into the action because he knows she's fine. And here's when it's not, like, hang back. But then you get by the end, right? She's reckless. She's laughing. And she's right inside the action, to the point where she's getting pulled back now by soldiers to stay out of the way. Like, what a 180. And it sets up such a nice contrast from the beginning to the end. And there's such gradual progress that it's really nice to have those moments. And then, of course, you know, at the beginning, she's still figuring out her place in all this. And that question that she asked, would you photograph the moment if I got shot? Because that's where that clip that we played ends, with Lee saying, you know, this only ends one way. You know, and you remember that whenever you're scared or losing it or getting blown up or shot. And Jesse's like, well, would you photograph that if I got shot, that moment? And of course, we end up getting that answer. It's a dramatic question, and it's a good one. And I didn't think of it in the terms that you put it, man, but I think you're absolutely right. There is a line in the sand for Lee, and it turns out it's journalists. We protect each other, and it's when that goes away that she loses it. When Sammy dies, that's when she loses it, and she can't stand to see it happen again, and that's why she intervenes for Jesse. She's like, I'm not going to photograph it. I can't. We need to protect each other.
And I love that they never shoot a shot. They don't have any guns. They are never a part of the fighting. They are only there to document it. Like there's no moment where they have a choice to like pick up a gun or not or anything. It doesn't even present as like, you know, that's not even, it's almost like it's not even a thought that could happen, where, you know, Jesse would pick up a gun to defend Joel or Lee or something. Like it's just, nope, that's a different part of the world. Like that's a different world that these folks are not a part of. They are only there to document it. So, and it doesn't even need to be a part of the story where they have to make that decision. That's, you know what I mean? It's just, nope, everybody else can do the shooting, the killing. These people, we're just going to document it. The only one who does any, I guess, killing, but we don't really even see if they're actually dead, is Sammy when he drives the car into Jesse Plemons' character or whatever. We don't know if he's dead or not. I assume he might be, because that looked brutal.
Yeah, it did. But, that did look brutal. But
you know,
to your point.
But it's not a gun. And it's in self-defense. You know,
it's in self-defense, but he also dies because of it.
True. True. Exactly.
And so it's like he's violating the principle of engaging, and he pays the cost for that. But it is nice, too, because without someone dying there, and he makes the most logical sense. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, you kind of just introduce two characters and then kill them off immediately, and it feels like a cheap get-out-of-jail-free card instead of making us pay a cost through one of our main party members. And so it's important that there is a cost to that victory. Uh-huh. And so I respect the writing level of that, even if it breaks my heart, which is even better writing.
And I mean, the one thing I don't like about that is, since when has a car ever snuck up on anyone, especially a big, heavy one that's driving through an open field? That
full speed.
I call bullshit on that. bullshit on that.
Yeah.
But I let it go. You know, I let it go and it's fine. It just felt cheap to me a little bit, honestly. Yeah. But it's fine.
You get a free, you get one free one, and I think that was it. Like, I don't feel like there was any other cheap moments. And same. Yeah. That certainly occurred to me as well, but you go with it. You're like, you know what? That's fine. I want my guys to live. Mm-hmm. And they did.
Yeah.
They did live, Todd.
Yes.
And so, by contrast, arc-wise, Jesse, you know, goes through her whole innocent to, like, I don't know, aggressive, and then Lee, the hardened, tired from everything she's seen, goes from that to, I mean, at the very beginning, right, she's taking the hard pictures. She just narrowly escaped dying, and her first instinct is to grab her camera and go start taking shots. And then I think there's a shift that happens a little bit after that, though, whenever Jesse finally starts taking pictures, right? They're at that whatever university thing, and the guy gets shot. He gets pulled to safety, and they're trying to save his life. And Lee's taking pictures, and then Jesse finally starts taking shots. And she squats down next to the guy, and she's taking these pictures. And what does Lee do? She stops taking pictures. She goes and sits next to Jesse, and she starts looking from her perspective. And I feel like it's that moment where she slowly starts to soften. She's taking fewer pictures throughout the film at that point, because from there, most, maybe even all, I'd have to double check, but most of the pictures from there are taken from Jesse. Like, we start seeing just her taking the pictures until much later in the film, when they're in the White House and Leah's starting to get her resolve back. And of course, that's when she dies, trying to save Jesse instead of taking the shot. Yeah. Cinematography wise, there's a couple compositions that I really love, and it's about discovery in the frame. One is that moment you're talking about, the slow-mo of the soldiers getting executed, and it's brutal and beautiful at the same time, which is its own kind of horror, right? Seeing these beautiful moments that are just absolutely abominable by our emotional and regards to humanity. The tire guy getting lit on fire is just, you know, it's disgusting, but it's also shot and photographed really beautifully. But that moment when they're shooting those guys, and you cut to, like, where is the gunfire coming from? Because you see the soldiers on either side. And then finally they show you there's someone in that car that's just at the edge of the frame. And you're watching the guy just, like, light him up, bullets slowly flying out. And the discovery of that frame is your eye slowly drifts from that guy shooting to the guy next to him. And he's got this smirk on his face, and it's very slight. It's not like he's smiling wide, but he is enjoying it. And I love those little slow discoveries of horror and more horror, because you're seeing what joy people are getting out of killing each other. And that's disturbing in its own way. But at the same time, there's another composition that I really liked, is when they get to Pittsburgh, and you kind of only know they're in Pittsburgh by the graffiti. And there's this big wide shot.
Go Steelers. I love that moment.
God.
Yeah.
Because you have this overpass at the top of the frame that says, go Steelers. And then your eye slowly drifts to see these bodies hanging off the overpass. And it's such a brutal juxtaposition and makes you feel that's the state of America right now. Like, everything's a competition. Go Steelers, right? We have our teams. And there's 30 of them, for lack of a more precise count, right? Isn't there like 30, 32 teams in the NFL or something like that? And that's how it feels in politics, right? There's 30 teams and everyone's got their jerseys that they're rooting for. And over there, there's the victims from all our bludgeoning. I don't know. There's a lot of thoughts that you take away from seeing that image. And that's this entire movie in a nutshell. Everyone's taking away their own different experience and asking their own different questions or making their own judgments. Not even asking questions. People are walking out with snap judgments. But I don't think it's that easy to do that. If you actually sit and process this film, it's not that black and white. I mean, the sides aren't very clearly drawn. You might look at the president as this, you know, imitation of Trump, but he's not in office right now. Maybe he was when he wrote this. I don't know. I think that's kind of beside the point. But who you have in the White House, like, these two black women negotiating both sides, right? You have the press secretary or whoever she is, chief of staff maybe, and she's negotiating a peaceful step down for the president. Like, we want to make sure he's safe. And you have on the other side a black soldier, you know, woman who's saying, yeah, you bet he's safe with us. And she's just got her gun pointed, saying whatever she needs to get the president to come out so that she can take him down. And that's all obvious, but there's no clear visual line of what the factions are made of. And it goes to the point that, you know, we are hammering home here. And I think that's for the better of the experience, because at the very beginning of the film, they make the decision that this is going to be a road trip movie, right? Let's see the State of the Union. And that's what the nice thing of this being a road trip movie is it's not a snapshot of one space. It's throughout the whole seaboard. And you get a feel for just the chaos running rampant. But the second Sammy finds out, he sets up all the tension through his comment of DC. They killed journalists on site in DC. They consider them enemy combatants, right? So now that little bit of exposition creates tension through this anticipation. Every time we see someone with a gun, are they going to kill us? We don't know who's who. Like, are they with DC? Are they against DC? You don't really know. And so that's a really nice way for us to always be on edge every time we meet someone new, which is all the time because this is a road trip movie. It's a really nice setup to keep you on your toes throughout the entire thing. Yeah, I think that's about it. I mean, the movie ends when the president dies, but it's not necessarily clear that that's going to solve anything, because what happens next, I don't know. No one knows. But I think it's a really interesting moment whenever they're getting ready to kill the president and he just yells, wait. And they're like, oh, and you kind of laugh because you're like, oh, he just wants his interview. Or is he going to ask for more leniency? I don't know. Let's see. But then he's like, I think he's gearing up to actually set up an interview. And all he wants is a comment. That's brutal.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And what the comment is perfect. When he said, please don't let them kill me, I in my head, I said, oh, please accept that as his comment. Please. And he said, that'll do. It was perfect. It was fantastic. I absolutely adored that. Like, you know, politicians in a nutshell, when it gets down to it, you know.
It really is.
You know, someone, yeah, anyway.
Yeah. It's hard to discuss this film without really getting into the nitty-gritty of American politics. But
yeah.
Maybe at the same time, it's easy just because it's so open and broad that you get to draw and paint your own picture of what it all means. I don't know. I liked it more than I thought that I would. Like, I don't know that I'm going to revisit it much, if not for a very long time. But I think it's interesting to keep thinking about the marketing of the film. Because to your point, this bright green, I don't know, sans serif font that they got going on is completely betrayal of the film itself, because the title sequence of the film is Civil War in this kind of typesetting, right? It's very serif. It's very journalistic. It's typewriter, and that plays into what the movie is actually about. But at the same time, I get why you wouldn't necessarily want to use a typewriter because it's so overused in a lot of films, but it makes the most sense.
But they use it in the film.
Yes.
Like, the types that they use in the film is different than what they use for the promotion. And anytime that I notice typeset, you've already lost me. Like, I don't know. I just don't understand it, honestly. You know? Yeah. But it's fine, because maybe the point there is to upend you so that you don't know what you're going to get going in. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, has done some movies that, like, pretty much you're always not sure what to expect when you go into it. I mean, Men, for example, Annihilation, you know, like Sunshine, like, you don't know what you're going to get when you go in. And then, you know, so maybe the only way, or like, not the only way, but the way he wanted to do this was, I'm going to make you think you know what you're going to get. And then by giving you this type of promotion, this type of trailer, this type of font, this color, and then get you in there. And yeah, and he does that a lot, to your point earlier, with music throughout the film. I think the music choices are probably just like what he's listening to at the time. Personally, he's like, yeah, this movie or this song would be great here, but it's not. Only because of the feeling that it emotes, not because of any other thing. It's just like the song at the end. I don't know who that was, but I think it was probably like, what is it? LCD sound system is what it sounded like to me. Maybe he's just listening to LCD sound system and was like, I want to end my film with LCD sound system. I don't even care what's, but it totally works because it's just a soundtrack. It's just like you know, it's just whatever the vibe of the music is to evoke a certain emotion to then upend it with the visuals that I'm going to give you. You know, it's almost like, because you don't know where the next scene is going to come. I mean, when they start falling asleep, for example, before the first action scene, well, except for the explosion at the very beginning, where they say they're going to go to the action the next day. They fall asleep in the truck and we're just silent. And then boom, it explodes with gunfire and explosions because they're already there. Yeah. And it just upends us, you know, and he does that throughout the film really well, like I said earlier, where there's a really fine line between peace and war, and that is a gunshot. Right. And so we're going to give you that line. We're going to walk that line and show you the difference between the two. They're going to be sleeping and then gunshots. And yeah, the use of silence is so great here too, and slow motion, like really pointed, only chosen for certain moments that he really wants you to like be present in. It's used really tastefully. Anyway, yeah, I absolutely really really liked it. I would like to see it again, just because I feel like I would probably, like you said, you know, you missed some things the first viewing. I would probably see it a different way and see some things a different way, but I'm also okay if I don't see it again, because it was really brutal in some instances, you know. And I really like filmmaking that doesn't ignore things that are visually seen. It's really simple, but he does a really good job of calling things out. Like, I mean, when they're dumping the bodies into the mass grave and that one guy, they all slide out. That one guy gets hung up. You know, we never see that guy slide into the grave. We never see him. But we do hear Jesse Plemons' character say, Bobby, one's hung up there, just off camera, just like out of, you know, wow. We're calling that out as a thing, even though it's not made a big deal. It's just this passing thing that Plemons' character says to acknowledge that that is happening, that we don't see off screen. It's off screen that we don't see it. We're, I think, focused maybe on either Lee at the time or Jesse or something. We're focused on one of our characters, but he's saying, hey, there's one hung up. We never see anything happen to him. He just is there. That's great. That is great filmmaking. And I think things like that happen all the time. The scene where they're, the sniper scene, he shoots. And then all we hear is, I've got good news. Cut. End of scene. Yeah. That is fantastic. I wish more movies did that kind of thing. We don't need to see it. I just need to feel it and know, you know? In that shot too, so much happens in that one shot. We see the sniper. Can you guys shut the fuck up? And then his finger goes on the trigger and we stay with him and he shoots. I've got good news. And that's perfect. It's just perfect. So anyway, there's some really great moments. Obviously there are some moments that I'm not super fan of, but as a statement for what it's supposed to be, I feel like it really makes a great statement. So another win from Alex Garland.
Absolutely. Nicely done, man. That's all I got. So yeah. What are you going to recommend this week?
Okay. Not going to walk into anything. Awesome. Well, I have not finished it yet, but I do want to recommend it because I'm really, really enjoying it and I'm almost done, but I want to recommend Shogun on Hulu. Super, super cool. Really kind of heady, slow in some ways, but really good journey to go on. Really beautifully shot, well acted, well written. I love that it's all like 90% of it is subtitles, so they don't try to Americanize it too much. So I'm going to recommend Shogun.
Dude, nicely done. I am going to recommend a documentary. And
cool.
This one's rough. So it's called Restrepo, and it came out a while ago, like 2010. And it's a guy documenting a troop in Afghanistan. Now, what makes it tough isn't necessarily this one. It's the one he did after that he died while making as a journalist, you know, in a war-torn country. I forget what it was, if he stepped on a landmine or a grenade or an RPG, but he died doing his job. So you watch something like Civil War and you think journalists are safe in wartime. They're not. I mean, not even getting into like Khashoggi, a journalist who was literally butchered for his reporting. And so, and there's a lot of, I mean, there's so many stories if you actually think about it. There's a lot of stories over the years, even in the last 20 years, which you might think, you know, times have gotten better and they have, but it's still dangerous to do your job and to tell the truth. And so Restrepo is a really, you know, nice insight into what it was really like for troops in overseas. And you might watch some films like I do, like I watch war films and Jarhead or whatever. But what does it actually look like to be in the mountains in Afghanistan? This is what it actually looks like. And it's way less glamorous than you might think, than a production designer would dream up. Because my God, I wouldn't want to be in any of those bunks. And knowing the price that you know, filmmaker paid ultimately to bring that kind of, I think he was making Corn Gall after that a few years later. And so, yeah, Restrepo, and you'll find out why it's called Restrepo within the film. It's powerful and hopefully makes you a little bit more gun shy, you know, about the stakes of war, civil or otherwise. Yeah. And stay tuned for next week. We're going to take a look at Dev Patel's directorial debut with a film. I have zero idea what this movie is about. I haven't seen a preview. It's called Monkey Man. So that could be any number of things. I don't think it's a literal monkey man, but time
will
tell.
I don't know. I think there's a mask involved. Who knows?
So stay tuned for that. Sounds like another feel-good film. And if you're enjoying the show, don't forget, subscribe, drop us a review. If there's something you like that we're doing, let us know. If there's something that you don't like that we're doing, don't let us know. Go away. Just play. We do our best. And we know we're imperfect, but hopefully these are conversations that are thoughtful and are made with, you know, care, even if imperfectly. And so, yeah, if you want to drop a note on this episode, you can do that at thepestlepodcast.com/civilwar.
And our quote of the day today is from George Orwell. Ooh, war is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength.
So obviously this is from 1984, right? The book.
Right.
And this brings up the other thing that I wrestle with of filmmaking, storytelling, and just working in media, broadly speaking. Orwell wrote this book about a government who just lies through its teeth to the citizens. And you get insights into what it's like to be one of those citizens. That's a really dense book for how short it is. And it took me a while to get through it because I felt like every paragraph had something to say. And for most of the book, I think that's true. Like every single paragraph is giving you a lot to think about. And the thing that I wrestle with is, did that become a playbook for our government, for governments around the world, of how to manipulate your citizenry? And that makes me wrestle with the idea of what you put out. Is it a light? Is it a mirror? Or is it like foreshadowing by giving really good ideas to other people and what they do with that? So watching something like Civil War, does it make it easier for people to want to engage in a civil war? Because now they've seen what those images look like, and it's kind of breaking that ground. And then once the ground is broken, it's a little easier to get your hands in there and to dig it a little bit deeper. And then a little bit in incrementalism, you know, takes over. I don't know. I wrestle with that a lot. But I think usually where I stand ultimately is you can't always be responsible for what you make to the nth degree. Now, you are responsible for what you put out into the world, but not necessarily what people do with it. And it's a fine line. And I can't tell you what that line is exactly. It's nebulous. But I think you can do your best to not encourage a thing without taking responsibility for what people do with it. I don't know. Again, I'm still wrestling with it. That's kind of a non-answer I get. But watching something like Civil War, it gives me those moments of, is this making it easier to want to start a civil war, to secede and for militias to want to do their thing? Or is it a way to discourage? Because ultimately, someone like me is going to watch this and be like, yeah, I don't want nothing to do with that. Then someone else is going to be like, oh, that's cool. It takes nothing to want to you know, get a few people together and then we do it. I don't know. This is the momentum we need. I don't know. Maybe this isn't the movie that does that. Maybe it's Civil War II, whatever that is. I don't know. But I think these are good, healthy questions to be asking yourself as you're making things and as you're consuming them. Yeah. I don't know. Thoughts? That's a brain dump.
Man. No, I mean, the way I'm going to choose to read this specific quote, because I haven't read 1984, you have, is just on its face for what it is. So just the idea of ignorance being strength, I think maybe, you know, like when they went to that city that was acting like nothing was happening. I mean, the woman at the counter was happy, you know, she was like totally fine. But also, you know, if you don't know the horrors of something, then you're more emboldened to do whatever it is that you feel is right or you want to do. I have no idea about this quote, really, honestly. It's just interesting and something to think about. I think you're probably right. I mean, anything that's put out there is going to affect and inspire, that's put out there at this magnitude, is going to affect and inspire somebody in some way that it probably wasn't intended. I don't think that Alex Garland intends to incite a civil war.
Right.
But somebody who wants to have a civil war would look at this and probably say, you know what? This is a good, you know, example to follow or something. You know, and while you can't be, like you said, completely beholden to everybody's opinion on something, you are beholden to some extent on what it is that you are saying, you know? And I think that Alex Garland in this film did a really good job of not staying neutral, but of telling a specific story about a specific thing, you know, journalism in
general.
That's
a good point, because ultimately I think there's a quote, a while back, there was a CNN interview going on between these two people. One person was demonizing Islam and the other person was not necessarily defending Islam in specific, but broadly religion. And his point was, it's not what the religion says, because you could look at, you know, I can show you atrocities done by Hindus and Buddhists. And his point was, it's not what the religion brings to you. It's what you bring to the religion that ultimately creates evil. Like, the evil isn't necessarily in the religion. It's in the person and how they're going to walk away. So, and that, I'm saying that in response to what you just said, like, yeah, you know what? It is someone that wants to use this for ill. They're going to do that regardless. If you made civil war or not, they were going to do that regardless. Now, maybe that becomes their best tool. Maybe not. I don't know. But I think
it's the same. It's the same argument that people made with heavy metal music, you know, in the 90s, or like Marilyn Manson, you know, like, oh, all these kids are going to, you know, whatever. Like, no, no. It's just an outlet. It's an outlet for most people. It's like, I don't think that art is bad or good in that regard. You know, obviously people can make things and like make it, what is it, when you make it seem like a wonderful thing, the civil war, like to have a civil war, and that, you know, liberals are awful and so let's kill them all. Wow, you know, hopefully that never gets gets made on either side, liberals or conservative, like whatever, it doesn't matter. But, you know, to stay neutral and then for someone to, like it, like this film does, and for someone to say, oh yeah, this was my fodder that I needed to instigate a civil war, like, I feel like that's ridiculous. And I don't feel like art is good or bad, to your point. Same thing with religion. It's not good or bad. It's the people. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No,
so keep going.
That's, I think that's a good place to wrap it up.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode. I know I did. And it incites a lot of conversation. So hopefully what we talked about, you can take it and have some conversations with people that, that you respect their opinions. But maybe they're a little different than you. And join us next week. We'll be covering Monkey Man. Please subscribe, review us wherever you can. And if there's a film you'd like to see us pick apart, please let us know. Maybe we'll do it. Until next time, I'm Todd.
I'm Wes.
Go watch some movies.